Number one, A, steroids are being sold on Facebook and Instagram. I just found that on the news today, Dave.
Oh, shut up.
Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of the Drugs and Stuff podcast, Dave is offering phlebotomy now through his services. So you can head on over there. We're going to start out talking about that. We've got some news about steroids being the Drugs and Stuff podcast. We like to talk about news stuff, Dave, in his background noises. We've got listener questions after the break. We're going to talk about HCG. We're going to discuss DHT blockers in AIs with that benefit to help to free up test, Clomid, and cum volume. And Dave tells me everything about a movie called Resident Evil. I've never heard of it. He knows all about it. There's some conspiracy, something to do with China and a virus that's happening right now. I don't know, but we're going to cover all that. We're going to do it right now on Drugs and Stuff. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Drugs and Stuff podcast. I'm Scott McNally. Of course, I'm here, as always, with Dave Crossland. Guys, this program is presented to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES. Thank you for watching on the YouTube page. If you guys are on the YouTube page, if you're new here, then I encourage you to hit the subscribe button so you can stay up to date with everything that we are doing. For everybody listening on audio, if you're listening at a podcast app, say iTunes, do us a favor, leave us a five-star review. That will help other people to find the programming. Dave Crossland, let's try this again.
Hello. Do you get a feeling like you've done something before? That deja vu sort of thing?
Dave's giving me shit, guys, because, well, we tried recording this once, and I was on mute.
I'm good. I'm good. So are we just going to go through it all again for those that couldn't hear the first time?
Well, yes, because I want people to know about your car accident.
Well, it wasn't that major. I was involved in a crash on Friday. Somebody ran up my arse end. My car is now poorly. Their car, I suspect, is going to get written off. Mm. And I'm a bit knocked up, but nothing too serious. But my wife is actually very sore. And it was her birthday. We were going out for a meal.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a cracking birthday present.
That blows.
Yeah, so she's been to physio today, but they were fucking useless. So really? I've gone and got one myself, and I'm going to speak to the insurance tomorrow and tell them I'll send them a bill. She went for it. We were told to fill in these online questionnaires so that when we got to the physio, there'd be no time taken up doing these questionnaires.
Yeah.
She got there. It was a half an hour slot. The woman was 10 minutes late getting her, spent 20 minutes asking her the questions on the questionnaire, and then sent her on her way.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just like, exactly. It's fucking useless. But other than that, life has been pretty normal. Nothing to report. Nothing exciting happening. The business side of things, so not so much me, but Crossland Harm Reduction Services, which is the company.
Yeah.
We're now doing bloodletting, which is quite difficult to get over here. Now, some guys go to blood donation banks, but technically as an injection user, you're not supposed to go there and you're not supposed to donate.
Yeah.
The blood is screened, so I don't think there's particularly a risk to end users or end recipients. But my wife's a fully qualified phlebotomist. She's registered as a phlebotomist. She's insured as a phlebotomist. So it just seemed... She does mine, she does a couple of other people's, and it just seemed to be a natural progression that, you know what, this is stupid. We're sitting on something here that could be very useful.
Absolutely. Dude, and especially if it's hard to get done over there. I mean, I had a hard enough time here in the States getting blood taken. So I think that's great, man. You could definitely be helping people. Not to mention, there is a benefit of removing the heavy metals from your body, which that's going to help expedite that situation, whereas men... We don't ever let blood, you know, we don't lose that blood. And so those heavy metals can stay built up long term from what I understand. So, I mean, outside of just hematocrit and hemoglobin, there's that benefit too.
Yeah, I mean, bloodletting's been done since fucking hell, Egyptian times. I'm not so sure if I buy into all the health benefits that are associated with it. I mean, there's a lot of argument that it's actually very beneficial to mental health and cognitive function and various other aspects of that. But there's a whole list of things that are claimed to be beneficial from bloodletting. From my perspective, it's purely as a harm reduction measure to lower blood volume, to lower blood density for people that use. And it's even if you show at your local GPs elevated blood levels, they're hard pushed before they'll start actually treating the problem and doing something with it. So it's quick, it's convenient. Unfortunately, at this point, people have to come to us, but we are considering doing some clinics and trying to get some gyms or supplement shops to allow us a space that we can use. Because as long as the equipment you're using is fairly sterile, the environment, as long as it's normally clean, it doesn't have to be super, super sterile. You know, it's more a case of what you use and preparation of the area. But unfortunately, the kit to do it is pricey and it has to be shipped from Germany,
Oh, really?
which is a pain in the ass. So, and then obviously you've then got the disposal of the blood afterwards because it's a biocontaminant, so you can't just throw it away. It's got to be handled properly and professionally. You've got to pay somebody to take it away.
You can't just dump it down your sink, Dave.
You technically could. By law, you are not allowed to dispose of it through normal waste, but you are allowed to put blood down the toilet. Yes, you
Oh,
are.
okay.
But I feel that's a bit irresponsible if you're talking about pints and pints of the stuff.
Yeah, a lot of blood. That would get,
So we've contracted proper, biohazard waste disposal, which we can call out and they'll just come and collect when we've got enough that's viable to collect.
Excellent. I like that idea.
So yeah, so we've launched that. Well, I don't know if I've priced it right. We priced it at £40. I've based that on sort of costs involved more than
Oh,
anything else.
okay.
Cost of insurance, cost of the kit, which is a tenner in its own right, the cost of disposal. So I don't know if that's going to be marketable at that price or not. I felt it was fair, but we'll see. We'll see what comes of it. A bit of interest, but we'll see if it actually develops into a viable service or not.
That's cool,
But
though. I like the way you're thinking, and it's cool that you guys could take advantage of that and that you get to work together with your wife on this project too.
She's not so keen.
No,
No,
no.
it's just she's qualified and everything and all the rest of it, but she's very, very professional when she does stuff.
That makes sense. Versus you, on the other hand, well, you're just Dave, and
Yes, yeah, I'm just my
there's that. Hey, I wanted to, we started talking about this before we realized that the recording wasn't working right. I wanted to tell you about some stuff I saw in the news, but I'll flip the script here because I had two things. Number one, A, steroids are being sold on Facebook and Instagram. I just found that out in the news today,
Oh, shut up.
Dave.
Like you didn't know.
The DEA is warning how easy it is for teens and young adults to buy illegal steroids from sites like YouTube, Facebook, and even Instagram. That's a direct quote from Fox San Antonio. Yeah, they said it's out there, and that also they are warning that some of this stuff is made in the black market. And that it could be diluted with other substances and quantity prices that they could make off of that by diluting it could even be doubled or they could triple the size of their batches. I haven't heard too much of that happening. I feel like more so you're just not getting the right stuff, but we've talked about that a bunch, right? But they're saying, they're warning though that like it's going to be, they're looking at it, I think, like cocaine, like somebody's going to cut those steroids in half, cut it with talcum powder.
I think this is typical of a lot of the media sort of reports. They don't understand what they're talking about, so they take the fact that products are underdosed, and then try and apply the knowledge that they know about other drugs like cocaine. And we know cocaine's caught. So yeah. If steroids are underdosed, then they must be diluted in the same format, which obviously we know is not correct. So I think you'll find that's a shitty reporting. But yeah, it amazes me sometimes how out of touch media outlets are and some of these people are with what's actually going on. I mean, I see it with academics as well. You'll see academics doing studies and you sat there thinking, no shit, Sherlock, we've known this for 20 years. You know,
steroids increase muscle mass.
Yeah, quite literally, though. And it's just like...
We've proven it, though.
I've never decided, is this because they are literally that disconnected to it? Or is it just a case of, I need some funding to do a study so I don't have to go get a real job, and this fits the bill? I've never quite worked out what the drive is behind that. And probably a mixture of both. But you do, you know, there was one about medical professionals and not supporting steroid users and stuff like this. And you think, yeah, we've been moaning about this for 10 years, yeah. You know, and stuff like that. And you just think, Jesus Christ, are you really that disconnected from the real world? But yeah, it's not uncommon for reports to get things slightly skew-iff because they see an end product and then they apply the logic of another thing to it. In this case, quite often it's cocaine, dealing of cocaine or dealing of marijuana, yeah. And apply those formats to steroid dealing. Stuff like, you see this as well, stuff like code words. Have you ever known a steroid dealer talking code?
No, yeah.
The furthest it goes is usually your supplements. That's about as code as you get.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And obviously the standard slang words for tren and test and decker and all these sort of things. But yeah, and you'll get people trying to apply. You see this with police cases where they'll try and apply that logic of slang code terminology for drugs being used within steroids and coming up with some of the maddest combinations you've ever thought of, you know.
Jeez.
No, he's just talking about protein powder, mate. That's all it is. He's not talking about some secret code words for steroids.
Yeah.
You get a lot of that sort of stuff as well.
I'm looking at another, there's another report here. This is my other news break. This is a guy who did get popped over in, this is in Texas, Harrison County, Texas. Tell me if this sounds right to you, Dave. He's doing 72 months in federal prison. He was sentenced January 16th. It said that, what did he do here? It said conspiring with others to distribute at least 2,500 units of anabolic steroids. He served as a distributor of the steroids, receiving the drugs from foreign suppliers and then selling them to other dealers and users by way of the internet and through the United States mail.
I think the sentence on first reflection sounds a bit harsh. I mean, 72 months is quite a lot, to say the least. But then 6 years. But then when you read the rest of the terminology, so what we've got here is a wholesaler.
Yeah.
And when you look at sentencing for criminal case, part of what goes into the sentencing is your position in the supply chain.
Okay.
Now in the UK, we it's classed as 1, 2, and 3, and you can have significant 1, significant 2. So significant one is top boss, big boss.
Oh, okay.
Overseeing everything. 2 would be involvement, knowledge. 3's your runner, who just does as he's told, doesn't know where it comes from, doesn't know where it's going, just takes it from A to B, collects this from there to there, and that sort of thing. And that has a huge influence on sentencing.
Okay.
So this guy is described as being a distributor to several other people that are selling.
Yeah.
So it's wholesale level. So, yeah, it does seem a bit on the strong side, but when you take into consideration that usage is illegal, the possession is illegal, and supply is illegal, then it doesn't strike me as being an overly harsh sentence for someone who's regarded as being top of the tree.
Okay.
I mean, he's the one bringing it in.
Yeah.
So he's the main importer and distributor. So that, in their terminology and the way they look at things, that's quite a significant individual in the supply and dealing of steroids.
Yeah.
He may not be passing. I mean, they say 2,500 units, I think, don't they, in the report?
Right. Yes.
Which is a decent amount. I mean, is, but what they don't give that is they don't give that on a time scale. Is that 2,500 units a week, month?
Yeah, they don't
as
say.
Much as they. No. So if it's, he's caught with 2,500 units at one time, that's a decent level of stock. Mm. If it's 2,500 units in total, then not so much, depending on the time scale. But again, you've got to look at his positioning as well. You know, the fact that he's importing and then distributing, and he's not distributing to end users. So he's, from an enforcement point of view, very high up on the supply chain. And that in its own right is going to stiffen your sentence.
I'm looking at the 2006 steroids report, sentencing commission. 11. Generally, a unit. This is where it sounds like a bigger deal than it is. So we were wondering about this. A unit is defined as one pill, capsule, or tablet. If the substance, except for GHB, is in liquid form, one unit means 0.5 milliliters. In cases involving anabolic steroids, however, a unit is defined as being 50 tablets, or if injectable form, one unit is 10 milliliters. Okay.
So it is. So it's 2,500 vials or 2,500 tubs of gear. That's a decent whack.
It may have changed. This was 2006. So it may have changed since then, because I know after I thought Operation Raw Deal and around then that they made it stiffer, and they started coming out with laws for super pills too, as they called them, like pills that were super high dosed, to that you only needed one of them versus 10 of them, that could be looked at as a different amount of units. I don't know,
but see that probably comes from ecstasy.
Oh.
Because MDMA got super strong, it went to 200 and 300 milligrams per tablet.
I have no clue about that stuff. That was like way after my time
ecstasy started off really strong. Then it went down to literally 10, 20 milligrams a tablet.
Mm.
And then it went back up in strength to like 200, 300.
Mm.
And so as a result, the significance of a tablet became much more important.
Okay.
Because it was, go back 10 years plus, and it was not uncommon for someone to take 5-10 tablets on a night out.
Okay.
Huh. Because they were so weak.
Huh.
Now we're back to people taking quarters and halves and single tablets.
Hmm.
So obviously 10 tablets now is much more significant in dosing than 10 tablets was 15 years ago.
Hmm.
And you see that sometimes they'll try, and like we were talking earlier on about the news report on the knowledge coming from what they knew about cocaine use and dilution and adulteration of cocaine.
Yeah.
You sometimes find the same thing is tried to be shoehorned that way, in that they'll look at law affecting class A's and class B's, and then they'll try and shoehorn steroids into that recognition of law.
Okay.
But I find it quite interesting that they do define a difference when it comes to steroids.
Hmm. Yeah.
That the unit is the vial or the 10 mil multi, and is the full tub and not the single tablets, yet in class A drugs or schedule 1 drugs,
yeah,
it's the single tablet or the single wrap or the single pro. And that's a lot down to how it's sold, because when you look at recreational drugs, it's sold per single tablet.
That's a good point.
Per wrap, where steroids are, they're sold multiples.
Hmm.
And I think that's why there is that distinct definition in the guidance there, which is down to how the things are actually retailed.
How does that work in the UK? I'm sure that a unit is defined as something different there.
Well, generally with recreational drugs, you don't use the terminology unit for a start, and it's recognized weights and measures.
Oh, okay.
So drugs are sold by weight. So
including steroids?
No, recreational drugs here.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So obviously MDMA is sold by tablet singularly, but heroin, cocaine, crack cocaine, and marijuana is all sold by weight.
I think it is here as well. So I don't know how that applies.
So with drug supply of recreational drugs in the UK, it will be weights and divisions of weights. So for argument's sake, if somebody's, and very much it's about the division. So if somebody's got 10 0.1 gram bags of crack, then they've got 10.1 gram, 10 pound deals of crack. Hmm. If somebody's got a whole 10 grams of crack in one bag, then they, you know, that's wholesale waiting to be subdivided into sale. You don't see people buying crack cocaine. And so that's a lot of the argument that goes on in court is that quantity a quantity that will be subdivided into supply, or is that quantity a quantity that's being bought in bulk for personal use? Okay. And often that I bought in bulk for personal use is the defense argument that sub dealers will use to try and downgrade it from intent to supply to personal possession. Okay. With steroids, it generally just goes on the vial, number of vials. And value of vials and number of tablets. So, and that's very much where I come in, because I'll discuss what the relevance of that number of vials is.
Yeah.
So, you know, if a police officer reports, well, I've got 100 one mil vials, then, and the person's arguing it's personal use, then there is argument there that potentially could be personal use, because that's equivalent of 10 mil vials, which is within the range of somebody having as personal stock.
Sure.
The same with tablets. You know, they've got 250 tablets. Yeah. Well, that doesn't relate in the same way that 250 tablets of ecstasy, well, you're going to be a dealer. There's no way someone's going to personally have 250 tablets of ecstasy to go out on.
Right.
Very, very, very unlikely. So,
yeah.
But obviously, 250 tablets in steroid terms is potentially five tubs or two and a half tubs, or even if you're buying the old D-ball from Thailand, it could be half of one tub because it came in 500 or 1,000 tubs.
There you go, yeah.
And so you've got to put it in context, which is what the report writing comes into. What I do a lot of time is putting into context what the amounts are, okay, and how they relate to usage, and what is acceptable as usage, and at what point does it come supply. It's just not defined in law. It never has been. And I don't think even with recreational drugs there's a set definition, but there is definitely a lot of guideline as to what would be regarded as personal and what wouldn't. When it comes to steroids, there's nothing at all. I have looked to try and create some form of guidelines, but it's just difficult because of the number of compounds and the range at which people use.
Yeah.
You know, so your first-time user with his two bottles of test because he's running a course of 500 or 400 mega tests a week for 10 weeks.
Right, versus national-level guy, right?
Well, your Boston Lloyd who's playing 10 grams, you know what I mean, and has got fucking 10 bottles a week, and there is a huge difference there.
Yeah.
And it's complex because of growth hormone and insulin and all the peptides and everything else that can be thrown in.
Yeah.
So it's not as quite clear cut, and I am slowly trying to put something together, but I'm also very conscious of the fact that if it gets adopted, it can be protective to users, but it can also be damning for users. So I've got to be careful that it's not too restrictive.
That makes sense.
And doesn't catch people, but it would also give people that are using a bit of an indication of where the boundaries are. You know, if you're starting going over 15 to 20 vials of gear, especially if you've got lots of different ones, that you may be considered as being a supplier.
That makes sense. Well, listen, let's take a quick break here, Dave. We've got a bunch of questions, and we're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about MHN, which was a question last week. Dave's done some research on that, and we've got all our questions to wrap up over at the Advices Radio Facebook group. Guys, we'll see you in a second.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. Dave, I had to run a commercial here to try to appease our great sponsor, True Nutrition, because otherwise we're definitely not monetizing this show on YouTube. I'll tell you that much right now.
You never do.
Never going to happen. I don't know why. No. I don't know why they don't let us monetize this one.
Now, you start putting makeup on and giving makeup tips, you'll be a millionaire in 6 months.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be a different demographic. But MHN. So last week we had a question about MHN. It is an oral steroid. I talked about my experience, which I could recap here in a minute. But what did you find out about it, Dave?
Well, trade name was MON. It's methylated nandrolone, so it's available in an oral form. It was originally produced in 5 milligram tablets, but I would assume UGL versions can be substantially higher.
Okay.
Do you remember what strength the tablets were that you had?
They were either 10 or 20 milligram, and I ended up taking either, I started out with one and then went to two. I think something like that. I think I went to, started at 20 and I went to 40.
Yeah, general dosing seems to be quite similar to D-ball.
Okay.
For most people, so 40, 60 sort of region. The best description that I can come up with for how it acts is it's very similar to Tren.
Really? Huh.
Hardener, dry, and noticeable changes in fat composition as well with MHN. And when you look at it and look at the anecdotal reports, pretty much a lot of reports of fat loss and a lot of reports confirming it to Tren.
Okay, I used it when I was dieting, and I got I got harder. I would describe it as the best way I could compare it, since it wasn't oral, would have been to a Winstrol, because I got that drier, harder look from it. But this is nandrolone. This is at base the same thing as DECA, but then it's methylated to become an oral. So you're saying that's going to pretty much all bets are off at that point in what it does.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, let's look at nandrolone as an anabolic to androgenic ratio of 126 to 40 odd, or something around that range anyway. So, you know, it's quite a low androgen. It's a moderately higher than test as an anabolic.
Yeah.
This stuff is 1600 to 850, I think.
Okay.
So vastly different. Very, very highly anabolic, but quite a substantial androgen as well. And so as a result, you know, it's... sorry, no, it's about 1300 to 281 androgen. I'm getting it mixed up with Halo.
What is that? So what does that mean exactly?
It's a very strong anabolic agent. It's not overly androgenic, so strength-wise, it's not particularly strong.
Okay. And what would that be similar to?
I don't know an oral that's that high in anabolic with that low in androgenic.
Okay. Okay.
So oral Tren can be as high, the methylated Tren can be as high as 64,000 anabolic.
Good God. Have you ever used that methyl Tren?
Yeah, which is why it's taken in micrograms and not grams, not milligrams, generally speaking.
I used that once. Actually, I had a pouch of it. I used it twice. It didn't go well for me. I was working for the pop company, and I remember I had to go to a warehouse that was unair conditioned in the middle of July and stock this, like, tear. They're like, basically, they're like, here, you dummy, tear down this pallet and rebuild it right there. And by the time I got done with that, I was like, oh my God, I think I have heat stroke. I'm going to die.
I used methyltren, went up to 3 milligrams pre-workout, got absolutely fuck all off it.
Really? Was it? Was it fake then, or what?
I have no idea. I bounce off it. Nothing significant anyway.
I want to say I started. Mind you, I was in contest prep, so I was using other stuff. But I had started at 250 micrograms. Then I went to 500, which I could definitely tell was stronger. 750 is when I felt like I got heat stroke in the heat.
I say I don't know, but then I've used Tren that I know is good stuff at relatively high doses and not had anywhere near the impacts that other people have.
Huh, okay.
I've gone up to a gram of Tren.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was your test at the time there?
2.
At 2 grams, okay. So it's not like you were playing some sort of game with low test and high Tren and, no, you know. No. Yeah.
No, I was hammering it all, and I felt very little difference. Probably, if anything, just a little bit more worn down.
Okay.
But I didn't get this super heat or the mental issues that most people report with Tren. Yeah. But no, I mean, going back to where we were,
yeah.
It's effective muscle builder chemically. It's not overly harsh on the system. Dry lean gains and very much similar to what you'd see if you were using Tren, in the fact that you're going to be harder, you're going to be drier, and you're going to experience some fat loss from the drug.
Okay. Now, price wise, that'd be where I'd be concerned. It's an exotic compound. You know, at the
end
of the day,
I've not seen this stuff on the market for years.
So if it is, I bet it's not cheap, is what I'm thinking. I don't pay attention to that stuff either, but I bet it would not be cheap. And then you come up against, like, you know, is it, because we're making it sound like this is actually some pretty good stuff. It could be really beneficial in certain situations, but cost to benefit, I could see it being pretty low depending on how much somebody's charging for it, considering its exotic status.
Yeah, I suspect it's going to be quite high. And I think one of the reasons it'll be quite high in cost is just because it's not popular. So there's not vast production of the raw. So if you're wanting to get the raw, they're going to charge you for it.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about why it's so different to Deca, you look at Dianabol, and that's methylated testosterone and a double carbon added at one point. And that completely transfers the anabolic and androgenic ratio of it. I mean, anabolic on D-bol's well in excess of 200.
Yeah.
And it's androgenic's half that of testosterone. So methylation really does change compounds. It gives them a completely new lease of life and can be a lot different to its precursor. So don't be shocked by the fact that it really does change how nandrolone behaves when it's methylated into an oral. It's very common. You see it with a lot of drugs. Once they become methylated, they become completely different animals. Generally, much more potent as well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Just like you mentioned with the Tren. I'm looking to see if I can find a price on it here, if I can find a place where it is available.
I don't know anyone selling it.
Apparently, I might not either. I knew somebody who did have it in the past. And yeah, no, I'm going to try this next page here. I don't think I see it either, though. I figured I'd just, while we were on the topic. And then after that, guys, we'll head over to our questions. And nope, it looks like I am not seeing it. Oh, wait, nope, I see it. Fuck, no, it's not available, though. So don't message me, guys. Okay, and this was being sold in 5 milligram tablets, 50 milligrams per tablet. I'm sorry, 5 milligram tablets, 50 tablets per tub. Yeah. So, but it's not available. Don't message me. I don't want those messages. I'm going to go over to our questions. We had put up a thread the other week to gather questions. And let's see. So there's our MHN question. We talked about T3 versus T4. We got one about Clomid and ejaculation. We'll get back to that, Tim. Okay. This is a real simple one. Here's a topic that I've been asked a couple of times. How valuable is HCG for a successful PCT? As compared to just using a selective estrogen receptor modulator and AI?
preceding cycle would pay a lot into this. If you've just done an oral only cycle, then an oral only PCT is probably going to be perfectly adequate. Regards to, I mean, the main use for HCG, people get a bit confused about HCG as well, I think, because they think it's in there to restart testosterone production. And its primary goal is to recover Leydig cells.
Okay.
Because the reason your nuts shrink when you're on cycle is because the Leydig cells inside start to atrophy, they start to waste away and they diminish in number.
Okay.
Yeah. So the reason behind the HCG use is to flood the testicles with HCG, stimulating the production of Leydig cells and Leydig cells to volumize back to their full size. Hmm. If you imagine it like this, you've got a factory, it makes biscuits, and you normally make 10,000 biscuits a day.
Why biscuits, Dave?
Just because I want a biscuit. and you're not selling any biscuits. You're only selling 1,000 or 1,500 a day now. So you've covered a few machines. You've pulled the plugs out. Mm. You've mothballed them, and they're sat in the corner doing nothing. All of a sudden, you're selling 10,000 biscuits a day again.
Yeah.
Well, you can't just plug those machines in. You need to clean them. You need to take the covers off. You need to check them over. You need to make sure they're working properly and plug them in and then run them up to production speed.
Yeah.
Your balls are the same. You mothball the equipment in your balls that produce your testosterone while you're on cycle. Hmm. You mothball your Leydig cells. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm going with you here, Dave. I'm going with you.
Like,
it's good.
You
it's
like
good.
My biscuit factory analogy.
you have a very good imagination, Dave. You're painting a very clear picture of this biscuit factory that I own now, apparently. We're cranking up production. We're making more biscuits. We need the HCG.
So the HCG takes the role of recommissioning this equipment to make your hormones.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why the HCG is done first, and then the SERMs are added.
Yeah.
Because the SERMs block the pituitary and the hypothalamus to increase the production of the signals that cause testosterone production. But the first thing we need to do is repair the factory that makes it, and that's what the HCG does initially.
Okay.
So generally, most cycles will benefit from HCG.
Yeah. It's never gonna be like a point where, you know, people ask that question. I would say any time it would help, right? I mean, that's what you're saying. It would never be like, I wouldn't use it for this cycle. It's only, why not have more insurance, you know, policy that you're going to be successful?
People have got a little bit scared, I think, because take too much HCG for too long a period of time and you will desensitize the Leydig cells, which means they won't respond to your own luteinizing hormone. But they will recover from that in 3 to 4 weeks anyway.
Okay.
It's just going to prolong recovery. It's not going to damage them permanently.
Yeah.
But you've got to pretty much hammer it to do that. I mean, even at Scully's 2,500 IU every other day for 20 days, you don't desensitize the Leydig cells.
I've only seen it happen one time, and I talked about this recently, and it was someone I know personally who was using HCG as part of his TRT protocol. And he was taking, I think, 250 twice a week, every week. He was about 32 years old, and he'd been doing this doctor prescribed since he was 24. And at that point, they increased it, you know, he said that the same dose was no longer giving him the same effect. But I mean, that was a long time, Dave. You know, he took that for like years.
Yeah. And as I say, probably dropping it for a month would have adjusted the benefit as effect as you know, up in the dose. But yeah, I mean, in most cases, I would recommend some form of HCG, but then in most cases, I'd recommend using HCG through the cycle anyway, so you don't get in that position in the first place. The weakest link we have in our endocrine systems is the Leydig cells.
Okay.
They have the pituitary in general and the hypothalamus even more so, are generally very, very robust. Mm. It's the Leydig cells. When you look at bloods of most people that aren't producing test, it's the Leydig cells that are the problem. You'll see high levels of LH and you just won't be seeing testosterone production by the balls because the Leydig cells are trash. So in the vast majority of long-term shutdown problems, it's the Leydig cells that are trashed. they will get to the point where they just don't recover at all, or they don't recover enough. So you end up trying to make 10,000 biscuits a day on equipment that's only designed for making 2.5.
All right. I've got another question. Let's see how you can make a biscuit analogy to this one.
Go on then.
DHT, he's got a couple questions. This is the more interesting of the two. We'll knock out your other one too after this. But DHT, could this cause acne? And he said, yes, I know that without DHT, it would destroy your sex life.
Yes, of course DHT can cause acne. Your sebaceous glands that produce oil in your skin are triggered by DHT.
Boom.
In the same way that you get hair loss from high levels of DHT. So, yeah, I mean, that's what creates acne on cycle is high levels of DHT triggering the sebaceous gland and creating more oil in the skin.
So basically what you're telling me is that DHT is kind of like you're increasing the production of biscuits.
No, we're going to make this a biscuit analogy, haven't we? Okay. So.
No, it's all right. We don't have to.
So, our normal biscuit producing machine is back to producing our 10,000 biscuits a day.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we increase DHT, we add overtime. So now we've got more biscuits being produced, which is why everybody's getting fat.
And these biscuits clog your pores, which therefore you then get acne.
Yes.
That makes sense. This segment has been brought to you by Dave's Biscuits. You can order them online.
The show is now sponsored by McVitie's Biscuits.
Everything we do is a biscuit analogy. I like that. He also wanted to know, he was talking about injecting in the delts, gauge and needle length. I feel like overall, Dave, people have gravitated to shorter needle length nowadays than 15 years ago. Yeah?
Be careful. 4 years.
You mean?
For 4 years plus, all I've used is a green.
What's a green?
Green to draw, green to inject.
What's a green?
What do you mean, what's a green? A green needle.
Yeah, but the different companies have different colors, I've seen.
No, they don't. They're universal. So
are they?
That's a blue, 23 gauge, 1.25.
Yeah, I have blue that are 25.
Yeah, that's your standard real injection. Yeah? A green is that big bugger there, but I don't know what size. I can't remember what size green is now. What is a green anymore? Someone watching will be able to remember what a green is. Here we go. Hang on.
What's a red?
Gay.
I have a pink here.
So green is 21 gauge.
Okay. You put a 21 gauge.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
It's like a sharp turkey baster, basically.
Oh, shh. Push yourself, boy. You want to see size of the needles we use to bloodlet?
No, I don't. I'll barf.
They're like that.
So when I went in to do my blood, I don't know what she used, but it wasn't that big. And she took a vein off the top of my arm. She went like over here. And it wasn't a problem.
Regards needles, yeah. No, I mean, the you can use to a degree any length and size you want. I'd be a bit dubious about using shorter needles. I'd be a bit worried about not getting in deep enough.
Yeah.
With gauge, the only thing you've got to remember is the narrower the gauge. So the higher the number, the narrower the needle. So a 21 gauge is quite wide. 23 is a bit thinner. 25 is thinner. 27 is thinner again.
Yeah.
So the thinner the gauge, the higher the number of the gauge, the thinner the needle, the more back pressure you're going to create when you try and inject.
Think of it like stepping on the hose or kinking the hose, more pressure coming out. Yeah.
So you might find, so you may find that if you go into a very narrow gauge, because you're concerned about scar tissue and those sort of things, which is fine, I appreciate that, then you might find you're going to have to start warming the injection up so it flows that little bit better and you'll get it in that little bit easier. And you're probably going to have to take much more time in getting it in.
Yeah.
I didn't use the 21 gauges for any reason other than I was too damn lazy to be pissing about changing needles and just bump in. And when you're injecting huge amounts of volume of fluid, you want it in and you just want to get it out of the way. So
I can see that.
But I always run the longer version, so usually the inch and a half or inch and a quarters, and just gone as deep as I could. Yeah. Within reason, obviously. But I appreciate people's desire to minimize impact with a needle, and I appreciate, but I think some people just go to extremes with it, you know, and they're injecting with stuff like this when I find it. Hang on.
This is like show and tell day on drugs and stuff.
I don't feel that really has any use as a steroid needle.
It's pretty small. What is that, 25, 27?
That's a 25, but it's less than an inch.
Yeah. You got to make sure you bury it deep enough, you know.
Yeah, if it's too close to surface, you run the risk of it pooling and forming a lump, and then you'll have problems with it dispersing. But standard practice, or has been how I've always done it, how I've always been brought up, is withdraw with the green, which is 21, inject with a 23.
Gotcha.
And that gives you a decent balance between flow rate and size of hole you're creating when you go in.
Okay. Let's see here. So looks like we had somebody piggyback. We got one question followed by a piggyback question, both of them relating to AIs. I'll start with Matt's question. He says, does taking an AI plus a DHT blocker free up testosterone by default, or would something like Perviron be needed also?
Right. A DHT blocker.
It's going to stop as much test from converting, right? So I don't know if free up is the word, though, you know.
A DHT blocker would reduce 5-alpha reductase, which would mean you'd have more test, but you'd have less DHT. But DHT is much stronger binding affinity than test, and therefore much more potent and much more effective.
Yeah.
An AI would reduce aromatase. So technically speaking, yes, by running an AI, you would increase the level of free test.
Yeah.
But you've got to remember there's also transport proteins, albumin and stuff like that are going to bind with tests. There's SHBG that will bind with free test. However, the higher your free test goes, the lower SHBG will go. And I know it was a lot more popular 15 years ago, but it still does become popular now and again to run Proviron on cycle to increase free test. But to be honest, once you've got your free test elevated, there's no need to start binding up SHBG anymore, because the three elevated tests will drive SHBG down anyway.
Okay.
So when you look at bloods of people that are on cycle, that are on a reasonable dose, most SHBG is going to be around the 10 to 15 mark, which is very low.
Yeah.
You know, upper range is 40 plus, I think.
Okay.
So there's no requirement for Viron in that situation. Lowering SHB anymore or binding SHBG anymore isn't going to really have any impact on your cycle. But when you first start out, yeah, I can see a use for Proviron just to get those DHT levels higher quicker. But otherwise, it will naturally drive itself down as your test levels elevate.
Okay. And then the follow-up to this, or the piggyback question was, Scott McNally, maybe speak to yours and Dave's go-to AI and lowest starting dose if one has minor side effects on test only.
DIM would be my lowest form of AI.
That's your go-to? No, okay. Well, he said go-to. What's your go-to AI and the lowest dose that you would use?
Aromacin.
Yeah.
12.5 mg.
Would you consider that for contest dieting or for off season?
I would use aromacin. What I generally do is I when I design cycles and when I run cycles and other people's cycles as well, is I start with a combination of Novadex. If test is high enough that I know it's going to create estrogen problems, I'll add in aromacin from start as well.
Okay.
And then I'll test the levels.
Okay.
And then I'll adjust according to what I'm trying to achieve.
How long would you wait to test those levels?
end of third week.
Okay.
Now, it's probably not going to be at full conversion at that point, but it's going to give me a strong enough indication to where we're going with it. If it was off-season, I'd stick with Aromasin.
Yeah.
For the fact that it's non-adulterant of cholesterol. And it's just generally an easier anti-estrogen to manage all round. If it was pre-comp, particularly if we're looking pre-stage, then I'd look at Adex. And again, would be quite happy to just look at estrogen levels 3-4 weeks out, see where we're looking, and see if I want to bring them down a bit lower to aid in fat loss and to aid in drying somebody out.
Yeah.
But obviously, you want to keep people as healthier for as long as you can. Comp prep's never going to be healthy. Don't care which way you cut it. It's always going to be an unhealthy occupation is doing a comp prep.
Sure.
So, you know, keep estrogen managed. Keep it reasonable. Keep it probably around 70 mL, 65, 70 mL. And then when we get into 2, 3, 4 weeks out, I might start looking at pushing it down a bit to really get somebody dry. All in the knowing that we're going to have a rebound at the backside of that. So we need to manage the way out of that as well at the same time.
Sure.
And again, then I'd only be looking at pushing estrogen high if I had a client that was struggling with body fat or struggling with water. Mm-hmm. If at running at 70, 75, 65, anywhere around that range, they're drying out, they're full, and body fat's coming off nice, I'd leave well alone. I wouldn't drive it down just for the sake of it.
Okay.
But I think the one thing that people need to get into the habit of doing much more is reading what their body's doing with a test and adapting and reacting according to what the numbers say, rather than doing something because they feel they're supposed to,
yeah,
or because it's the expected thing,
yeah,
or because they think they've got this, that, and the other.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the best. That's the best take home right there.
I mean, I've got a couple of clients off season that are struggling very much mentally with weight gain, fat gain.
Okay.
And they've always stayed very, very lean, and so as a result, eating calories and going into calorie excess is difficult for them mentally to do.
Yeah.
So I've made them all use calipers.
Okay.
Because if they have a watery day, for whatever reason, it might be they've had a shit night's sleep, cortisol's a bit on the high side. It might be that they've had a cheat meal the day before. You know, there's 101 reasons why you can water out all of a sudden, right, when you're on cycle. If they've got calipers, they can determine the difference between fat and water to some extent. So that way it stops them from overreacting and suddenly dropping the diets back without saying anything because they're panicking.
Yeah.
Prime example, guy, full-blown off-season, on-cycle, he's put 1 pound on this week and he says, I've got fat.
Yeah.
It's like, you've put 1 pound on, how have you got fat?
Yeah.
You know? Well, I just feel I look fat. And it's not. It's just the head, because he's at the heaviest he's ever been.
He's probably feeling a little bloated, too.
And yeah.
It's not a comfortable feeling, you know. It's not.
So if because you can't trust your brain and you can't trust your eyes, bring in a mechanical device of measurement,
yeah,
be it tape measure, be it calipers, but bring in some sort of mechanical device of measurement that doesn't require interpretation. That is just a number fixed. You can't argue with that.
Yeah.
And it will stop the mind games. But yeah, with estrogen management pre-comp, you want it low, but you've also got to put that into context of health. And if you're going to drop it really low because you're struggling with fat or you're struggling with water, I mean, at the end of the day, we only need to start pissing about with water if we're not lean enough in the first place.
Hmm.
So, you know, if you've not done the work or your diet's not worked as well as you want or whatever it be, and you're sitting 2 weeks out, and you're fatter than what you need to be, you can make yourself appear leaner on stage by severely dehydrating yourself.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then yeah, you know, in that case, it may be worth considering firing a bit of letrozole, slamming your estrogen down to the floor, slamming your progesterone down to the floor. That way you will be as dry as you possibly can with a bit of water manipulation as well. You will be as dry as you possibly can, and therefore you will appear leaner on stage than you really are.
Let's see here. We've got a few more. This one was kind of interesting, and I did some follow-up questions with him. He says, when I take beta alanine or citrulline malate, after about 20 to 30 minutes, I get some serious explosive diarrhea, but I also get crazy good pumps and a great workout. What causes the diarrhea, and do I need to worry about them, about the long-term issues, as everything else is great? And I wrote him back and I said, hey man, this is a real bummer. I said, what are your doses on these? And do you get the same thing when you use these things in very, let's see, do you get the same thing if you use them in various products? I imagine that any pre-workout you use on the market has at least had one of these. And I also asked, you know, have you tried using them individually? And he said, I buy them from a reputable online shop, so definitely not down to quality. Plus, it's done it for years with many different suppliers. Let's see. He's gone down to 2 milligrams, two milligrams down from 5 milligrams of beta alanine. It says otherwise he has an iron stomach.
Just sensitive to him. I mean, you get that. We've seen that with creatine. I mean, do you remember Gaspari Super Pump?
Oh God, Super Dump, as they called it.
Super Dump.
The magnesium. The magnesium in that. It was giving a lot of people a terrible, terrible reaction. I've never heard of this with citrulline and beta alanine.
I haven't heard of it either, to be quite honest. But I would assume that, like all things, people's stomachs can be sensitive to certain other products as they're not to others. Yeah. You know, we can be lactose intolerant. And I don't suspect that there's anything malice in that, just the fact that you are sensitive to those products.
Yeah. I would personally not want to use them if it messed up my digestion like that, because something's you're not using your food properly. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to. I would not want to create the inflammation that creating explosive diarrhea causes every day I work out. You know what I mean? I would want to avoid that. If it was from lactose, then I would stop using lactose. You know, that's an allergy.
Effectively, that's all I think it is. It's an allergy. It's a sensitivity to the product. And like you said, you know, explosive diarrhea is your body's way of getting rid of something it doesn't like.
Yeah.
That's why we're sick and throw up, because we're trying to expel something we don't like. You'll find, and it can be very dramatic, particularly if you're quite tight on your diet, that if you eat something that is not quite good, it's a little bit off, the rate at which that will pass through your system, it's like someone's laced your drink with mercury. You will be shitting through the eye of a needle within 30 minutes of consuming food if that food is bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just your body's expelling stuff that it doesn't like. Is it doing damage? Apart from the obvious inflammation and disruption to digestive tract that sort of expulsion will give? No, I wouldn't say it's doing anything particularly damaged, but if you keep forcing an irritant into your body, then long-term, you're going to become more and more internally inflamed. That's going to affect your digestion. It's going to affect your digestive tract. And then the good food that you're trying to eat is not going to be utilized as well as it could be. So stop using them. And I do think, now maybe this is me, and maybe I'm just an old-fashioned, miserable, old, grumpy git. I don't know. Well, I am a miserable, old-fashioned, grumpy git. But I got a pump by training fucking hard.
hey now.
Yeah, but I do just sometimes question, I need a pre-workout to train. Then really, should you be training? Really want to do?
I like pre-workouts. I like taking it to that next level. It's like a nitrous, you know, you throw the nitrous in the tank. But if I'm going to get a negative side effect, I'm going to find something else. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to use that.
Can we, I'm just a little bit against the fact that if you need to take a stimulant to have a good workout, then I start to question the motivation between what you're doing and why you're doing it. I understand taking a stimulant when you're having a rough day, but if it becomes a necessity, in order to have a workout that you feel is warranted, then to me, that's addiction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. 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 Just like waking up in the morning, man. Oh, and Victoria got me on coffee now, Dave.
Good lad. Welcome to the club.
Well, welcome to the club. I used to use an energy drink, and I'm totally off of them now. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that French press. That's what I've been doing. And it's freaking amazing, man. Now I wake up in the morning, and I'm grateful I'm off the energy drinks because I feel like that stuff is really not ideal for you. It's not good for your teeth, you know?
One of the problems is with energy drinks, yes, they're high in caffeine, but they're high in also a lot of other shit, where at least coffee, all it's giving you is caffeine.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been on that kick. But there's no question, man. I wake up in the morning, and I want that. I'm like, I'm happy to have that coffee. Why am I happy? Because I built myself a little addiction around it. You know what I mean?
There's also a psychological thing as well, I think, where you envisage waking up with having a coffee, and it's a sort of pre-programmed thing you go through, almost a ritual-like thing you go through.
And that's what we do pre-workout with the pre-workouts. We do it. Yeah, you know, I take that and I feel, I don't do this every time, but, you know, go with me here for a minute. I take that and I'm on my way to the gym and I get that beta-alanine tingle going through my skin and I got the music coming. It's going, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm all pumped up, you know, exactly. And I get to the gym and I'm like, I'm ready to kill it. So it's a ritual.
Hang on, I'm trying to find a glow stick. Hang on. I'm not sure I've got one in here somewhere.
You got everything in that desk.
Yeah. No, I just, honestly, it seems to me that we do become so reliant on chemical intervention for this, for that, and for the other.
Yeah.
And really, you should be there because you want to be there, and the pump should be coming from your training. I mean, if you're really that bothered about a pump, take fucking 2 IU of growth and 5 IU of slim 45 minutes before you train, and a teaspoon of salt, you'll have a pump from hell.
I was going to say, eat some salt in your, you know, yeah, increase your sodium pre-workout. That'd be a great idea.
But no, you know, if something's giving you explosive shits, then that's your body saying it ain't fucking no good for you. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, come on, guys. Let's stop just taking, this probably is a bit ironic, really. Let's stop taking shitloads of chemicals to train. But no, you know what I mean, though. I mean, it does seem to have gone to a point where I can't train if I don't have a free workout, and I can't do this. By the way, coffee, Blue Mountain. Go buy some Blue Mountain.
The Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee?
But make sure it's not a blend. Make sure it's pure Blue Mountain coffee.
Pure, straight from the Blue Mountain, not cut with other no. drugs like steroids.
Yeah, that's a lot of shit now.
Okay, this is an interesting one. I just tagged Victoria in this because I want to get her feedback, which she's doing research right now. She's at some big library doing research, so I'm sure she's not going to see this while we record the show. But I want her take later. So we'll see on the board over there. If you guys aren't part of it, by the way, head over to Facebook. We have the private group for Advices Radio. That's where we are taking all our questions from. Get this, Dave. Okay. Brandon says, I'm not sure if you're all taking questions here, but I've got a question, so I'll throw it up. Here we go. Okay. I thought she replied, but she didn't. Is it possible that my estrogen rises when my girlfriend is near/getting her period? Every single month that she is, I start to get acne, nothing crazy, but a few here and there. And sometimes my nipples will flare up. If not, what could cause random spikes in estrogen with everything chemically and my diet being very, very consistent? He says, I don't have the number blood work wise, but I know from the feeling that it's estrogenic sides.
Interesting. And I tell you why. Females.
I know where you're going.
Females will fall in cycle.
I was thinking the same thing, dude.
Can have phantom pregnancy.
Wait, hold on. You're breaking up on me.
Partners having pregnant.
You broke up on me. What was the last thing you said?
I said males have been known to have phantom pregnancies.
Okay.
When their partners are pregnant, they've been known to suffer with the same symptoms that their partners do, the same cravings that their partners do.
Yeah, like sympathy pains. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know what, however, when you first hear it, you think, daft pillock. Actually, they could genuinely be a synthetic pattern going on. He's not going to be on at this exact moment in time, is he?
No.
Right. I wonder if his partner's period is particularly traumatic or particularly symptom heavy.
Brandon's watching live because he just commented a minute ago. Brandon, if you can answer that question for us, that would be interesting and helpful.
I don't know if it's a psychological import or if there's some sort of pheromone type influence going on here. But we see that females go in sync. Yep. We've even seen animals go in sync with females, female animals go in sync with females. So there's definitely something that a female body emits when they're in menstrual cycle. And to be honest, I mean, when you think about it, a dog comes in heat.
Right, right.
And when an animal's in heat, each species knows that for miles around.
Is there something, I don't know, but I know that by being around, by having sex, that your testosterone levels can go up. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he is, so there's something there that by interacting with the opposite sex, it will change your hormone levels in itself. There's that, you know?
We see in the animal kingdom that when a female is in heat, so when a female's in menstrual cycle, they release pheromones that attract the male.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Part of their natural breeding process. We also know that to some degree this happens a little bit in females as well with males.
Yes.
So if that happens and there is an increased desire to mate at the point when a woman is at the most fertile, then I can see someone who is particularly sensitive being influenced by female pheromones that are emitted through their cycle. So I think it's very plausible.
He chimed in.
I think it's very plausible. I believe you can get substances that cancel out.
Really?
Pheromones, but I'm not sure. I know they do it for animals.
He chimed back in. He's listening. He's watching now. He said, yes, it is. I break out that she does have, I think, a rougher period. I think that was what you asked. He said, yes, it is. Yeah. I break out as soon as she does. And I personally have never broken out beforehand. She even notices it every single time. And I find that I have to take Novadux every single month to stop the side effects.
Right. I've just gone online about pheromones and can they, and yes, and pheromones definitely impact males.
Okay.
Both to and men can, it can have quite a strong impact on males almost as well. It can change a male's self-esteem.
Really?
The female pheromone.
Huh.
It can impact male behavior. There is research backing it, but it is a small impact.
Hmm.
But yeah, it would appear that it would appear that there is definitely something going on.
All right. We're almost out of time here. I want to go back through and just try to wrap up a couple questions that came up really quick. James asked on the thread here, he said, does it have to be intramuscular? He's referring to injections, I'm sure.
You
have
can,
we talked sub-Q?
You can do sub-Q. I don't think it's particularly beneficial for cycle dosing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely okay for TRT. The problem I would be concerned about sub-Q for cycle dosing is just the amount of volume of fluid you're having to put in.
Yeah.
But definitely, I would recommend IM, without doubt.
Omar Hurtada, he says, do you think gear users should be concerned about getting tainted gear with the new virus outbreak in China? Do you know anything about this, Dave?
My understanding is it's a form of SARS, and that it wouldn't live in the raw powder for the process.
Okay.
And that it is generally spread through person-to-person contact or close vicinity with somebody who's carrying the condition.
Okay.
So, in short, I think it's highly unlikely that you're going to contract coronavirus from gear.
Okay.
But to be fair, actually a valid point, seeing as the vast majority of raws come out of China.
Yeah. What about, we have one more here. This is.
Have you seen the conspiracy theory around this?
No.
The company that produced it, that is supposed to have emanated from, the disease research place.
Okay.
Logo is the same as the Umbrella Corporation. And Corona is an anagram of raccoon.
What does that mean? I don't get it.
I mean,
I'm lost here. I don't even know what you're telling me right now.
Right. Okay. So, have you seen the films with the deadly T virus?
No.
Oh.
I don't watch TV, Dave.
It's not. So.
I don't watch films.
Why not?
I watch one movie only. It's called Under Construction 2, and I loop it at my house 24 hours a day. That's all I watch.
Right. So you've never seen Resident Evil?
No. I thought that was a video game.
It is, but it was also a series of 5-6 films.
Oh, see, I didn't know this.
Right. So Resident Evil is basically, there's a company headquartered in China called Umbrella Corporation.
Okay.
And they create the T-virus, which reanimates dead flesh. There's an outbreak, and everybody turns into zombies and runs around eating each other.
Okay.
And when you're bit with somebody who's contaminated, you also contract the virus, and it kills you, and you become the undead.
I saw this. It's called The Walking Dead.
It's a zombie-type thing, yes. So the whole film is based around Alice, who actually whose body mutated and joined with the T-virus to give her extra superhuman powers.
Okay.
But the logo for the Umbrella Corporation is exactly the same, though different colors, as the logo for the Chinese company that developed the coronavirus.
Holy shit.
And where the outbreak starts in the film is a place called Raccoon City, and Corona is an anagram of raccoon.
Ooh, that's scary.
I thought it was quite cool, actually.
Yeah, terrifying. I'm just glad I'm not in China right now.
As conspiracy theories go, I like that one. I think that's quite good.
We've got one more here. Clomid, does it increase ejaculate volume? Is this a true, and would the same apply if you've had a vasectomy? The first answer is yes.
Yeah. The second answer is, I don't think so.
No?
No. Because I think the interaction is going to be with sperm, which he's not going to have because the tubes are cut.
Okay. But I don't know about the volume overall.
No.
No? Okay.
Proviron, yes, it's used in fertility treatment, both male and female, and you're going to see an increase in sperm count because you're going to see an increase in FSH, and therefore FSH the is going to cause sperm. Yeah, you sorry, Clomid. Yeah. Sorry, Clomid. Because it's a serum, it blocks the receptors, increases LH and FSH output, so therefore we're going to see an increase in sperm production.
Yeah.
So Clomid would increase sperm production, therefore increase volume.
Of sperm, not of seminal fluid.
No. I would suspect that if sperm's increased, there'll be a natural increase in seminal fluid to carry the sperm.
So maybe.
But sperm does tend to get a little bit more thicker and gloopier. Hmm. Which is supposedly a good sign, apparently. I actually had someone messaged me about that because their missus found it disgusting. And he wanted to know how he could thin his sperm.
Really?
Huh. She was refusing to have sex with him or maybe other versions of sex, I'm not quite sure, because his sperm was too thick. Huh. And she was completely and totally traumatized by this.
You find anyway, a new girlfriend. Another girl might like that, you know?
I get some weird people contact me. Yeah. Anyway, but because vasectomy is the cutting of the tube,
yeah,
then there would be no sperm. So therefore, I wouldn't see it having any impact in somebody who has a vasectomy.
You could try it though. Wouldn't
you know? Yeah, there's no harm in trying, is there? I suppose it's not exactly a ruthless drug. You might feel a little bit pissed off.
There was a side. Yeah, there was a second follow-up question. We'll finish the show on this one. Can you please speak to the side effects of Clomid? I have heard it's not very nice shit. So I've always avoided it.
Person dependent, but yes, certain people are incredibly sensitive to Clomid and can suffer with severe depression-like symptoms.
Yeah.
I've generally not been so bad. And I think it is very much down to why you're taking it.
Okay.
So if you're taking it as a form of fertility or low test, then I would suspect that the symptoms won't be too bad because you're already going to have low depression type symptoms because of low test.
Yeah.
So, but if you're normal, then I could see that being more impacting.
All right. Well, let's wrap this thing up, man. We've gone long today.
Okay.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, head on over to crosslands.org.uk. You can reach out to Dave for some coaching services or get phlebotomized by Mrs. Crossland. You guys can work together as a team over there. I think this is cool. Of course, reach out to truenutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. And guys, thanks for watching another episode here of the Drugs and Stuff podcast. Do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. We'll see you next time, guys. Thanks, Dave.
My pleasure.